The fire let out a last crackle and a brief, gentle flare of light, showing me River shoulders clearly. His rough features were touched with the same quiet worry I'd seen on dozens and dozens of my clients' faces. "He still doesn't know who you are, does he?" The giant shifted his weight slightly, as if uncomfortable. "Your society is, to me, irrational and bewildering. Which is good. Can't have everyone the same, or the earth would get boring." I thought about it for a moment and then said, "You feel he has problems enough to deal with already?" River Shoulders spread his hands as if my own words had spotlighted the truth. I nodded, thought about it, and said, "We aren't that different. Even among my people, a boy misses his father." "A voice on a telephone is not a father," he said. "But it is more than nothing," I said. "I have lived with a father and without a father. With one was better." The silence stretched extra long. "In time," the giant responded very quietly. "For now, my concern is his physical safety. I cannot go to him. I spoke to his mother. We ask someone we trust to help us learn what is happening." I didn't agree with River Shoulders about talking to his kid, but that didn't matter. He wasn't hiring me to get parenting advice, about which I have no experience to call upon anyway. He needed help looking out for the kid, so I'd do what I could to help him. "Where can I find Erwin?"
"Chicago," he said. "St. Mark's Academy for the Gifted and Talented.
Boarding school, I know the place." I finished the Coke and rose. "It will be my pleasure to help the forest people once again." The giant echoed my actions, standing.
"Already had your retainer sent to your account. By morning, his mother will have granted you the power of a turnkey."
It took me a second to translate River Shoulders' imperfect understanding of mortal society. "Power of attorney," I corrected him.
"That," he agreed.
"Give her my best."
"Will,"
he said, and touched his thick fingertips to his massive chest. I put my fingertips to my heart in reply and nodded up to my client. "I'll start in the morning." It took me most of the rest of the night to get back down to Chicago, go to my apartment, and put on my suit. I'm not a suit guy. For one thing, when you're NBA-sized, you don't exactly get to buy them off the rack. For another, I just don't like them. But sometimes they're a really handy disguise when I want people to mistake me for someone grave and responsible. So I put on the gray suit with a crisp white shirt and a clip-on tie, and headed down to St. Mark's. The academy was an upper-end place in the suburbs north of Chicago, and was filled with the offspring of the city's luminaries. They had their own small private security force. They had wrought iron gates and brick walls and ancient trees and ivy. They had multiple buildings on the grounds, like a miniature university campus, and inevitably they had an administration building. I started there. It took me a polite quarter of an hour to get the lady in the front office to pick up the facts, granting me power of attorney from Erwin's mom, the archaeologist, who was in the field somewhere in Canada. It included a description of me, and I produced both my ID and my investigator's license. It took me another half an hour of waiting to be admitted to the office of the dean, Dr. Fabio.
"Dr. Fabio," I said. I fought valiantly not to titter when I did.
Fabio did not offer me a seat. He was a good-looking man of sober middle age, and his eyes told me that he did not approve of me in the least, even though I was wearing the suit.
"Miss Pounder's son is in our infirmary, receiving care from a highly experienced nurse practitioner and a physician who visits 3 days a week," Dr. Fabio told me when I had explained my purpose. "I assure you he is well cared for."
"I'm not the one who needs to be assured of anything," I replied. His mother is.
Then your job here is finished, said Fabio.
I shook my head. I kind of need to see him, doctor.
I see no need to disrupt either Irwin's recovery or our academic routine, Mr. Dresden, Fabio replied. Our students receive some of the most intensive instruction in the world. It demands a great deal of focus and drive.
Kids are resilient, I said, and I'll be quiet like a mouse. They'll never know I was there.
I'm sorry, he replied, but I am not amenable to random investigators wandering the grounds.
I nodded seriously. Okay. In that case, I'll report to Dr. Pounder that you refuse to allow her duly appointed representative to see her son, and that I cannot confirm his well-being, at which point I am confident that she will either radio for a plane to pick her up from her dig site, or else backpack her way out. I think the good doctor will view this with alarm and engage considerable maternal protective instinct. I squinted at Fabio.
Have you actually met Dr. Pounder?
He scowled at me.
She's about yay tall, I said, putting a hand at the level of my temples.
And she works outdoors for a living. She looks like she could wrestle a Sasquatch.
Among other things.
Are you threatening me? Dr. Fabio asked. I smiled.
I'm telling you that I'm way less of a disruption than Mama Bear will be. She'll be a headache for weeks. Give me half an hour, and then I'm gone.
Fabio glowered at me.
St. Mark's Infirmary was a spotless, well-ordered place, located immediately adjacent to its athletics building. I was walked there by a young man named Steve, who wore a spotless, well-ordered security uniform. Steve rapped his knuckles on the frame of the open doorway and said,
"Visitor to see Mr. Pounder."
A young woman, who looked entirely too nice for the likes of Dr. Fabio and Steve, looked up from a crossword puzzle. She had chestnut-colored hair, rimless glasses, and had a body that could be readily appreciated even beneath her cheerfully patterned scrubs.
"Well," I said, "hello, nurse."
"I can't think of a sexier first impression than a man quoting Yakko and Wacko Warner," she said, her tone dry.
I sauntered in and offered her my hand.
"Me neither. Harry Dresden, P.I.
"Jen Gerard. There are some letters that go after, but I use them all on the crossword."
She shook my hand and eyed Steve.
"Everyone calls me Nurse Jen. The flying monkeys let you in, eh?"
Steve looked professionally neutral. He folded his arms. Nurse Jen flipped her wrists at him.
"Shoo, shoo, if I'm suddenly attacked, I'll scream like a girl."
"No visitors without a security presence," Steve said firmly.
"Unless they're richer than a guy in a cheap suit," Nurse Jen said archly. She smiled sweetly at Steve and shut the infirmary door. It all but bumped the end of his nose. She turned back to me and said,
"Dr. Pounder sent you?"